Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you, with the positive mind. Ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today, my friends, we're going to talk about people who make mountains out of molehills and people who do the opposite. I once had a German psychiatrist who worked for me. His name was Rainer Heilriegel. He spoke English. Fair. But I asked Rainer, he was a psychiatrist, I said, Rainer, what do you do with people? He said, Armand, and I won't imitate his German style, but just picture it. He said, I teach people there are mice and there are elephants. And when you see a mouse and you think it's an elephant, that makes you crazy. He says, and when you see an elephant, but you treat it like a mouse, he says, that makes you crazy. He says, I try to teach people that mice are mice and elephants are elephants. Well, today we're going to talk about this, because today we're going to talk about people who make mountains out of molehills, people who exaggerate worries. You know what I mean? Your husband is triggered into a panic because the IRS sent him a letter of inquiry. We're just checking on your address. But for some reason or other, he goes into a panic, thinking that he's getting a full-scale investigation. Your mate is upset. So upset that he's Subar. Subar, screwed up beyond all recognition. Radio appropriate. Upset. Because there were roaches in the cabinet. You know, found a few cockroaches, and oh my God, it can make you turn you into a tizzy. Not that roaches shouldn't scare you. Or, you know, sometimes. Your kid comes home and is crying because she wasn't chosen for the student council. And she's in a panic, and she's, oh, so upset about it. A customer walks into your store and is very upset because the clerk kept her waiting. A diner screams at a wait person because the food is late. A 10-year-old boy is utterly depressed because he can't get the latest Game Boy program. You're at work. You all have the same chairs. I heard of somebody who got really bent out of shape because someone switched chairs with him. You know? And it wasn't his chair. Somebody took all the chairs into another room, but when they put them back, they replaced the wrong chair. Think of the many ways that upset people, the many things, really upset people, things that are small but seen as big. In fact, you must know somebody who turns little things into big things. It's sometimes called making mountains out of molehills. Another word for it is catastrophizing. Yes, catastrophizing. Money worries could be catastrophized. You know, you could get upset about a 2-cent raise on a product or a discount you couldn't get or a little financial thing because somehow you feel so on edge about it. Jealousy is easily catastrophized. Your mate is attracted to somebody else or seems to be flirting with somebody else, or somebody else shows your mate attention, but that person looks better in his jeans than you do. And it could become a catastrophe. When you're dating, almost everything about love that doesn't go perfect becomes a catastrophe. How many girlfriends or boyfriends have you had, girlfriends you've had, who have talked about their relationship over and over again? Well, then he did this and then he did that. And first, you know, 1 week it's wonderful. And it's kind of exaggerated because romance lends itself to catastrophizing. It lends itself to exaggeration because it feels exaggerating. It takes over your entire life. Your love life could just be everything, you know. Oh, and then he brought me flowers, but the flowers were so perfect, so beautiful, so fantastic, unbelievable. He's the most incredible person. A person came to see me recently, And she told me about a string of relationships she had. She said, with the exception of this current relationship, she said, the one I just started, this one is different. And I said, I don't talk about current relationships. I said, I don't want to talk about a string of relationships and just focus on the current, because whatever mindset you're in, you're not going to adequately describe this to me, because you're going to be in some way romanticizing the current relationship. So I'd rather wait and talk about your old relationships. That would teach me more. Because people tend to exaggerate romance. Health issues. You know, you have a condition. And you wonder about a condition that you have. You may be a little concerned because you have an itch. And you think the itch is the beginning of something, or you have an ache, or you think you have a lump under your breast. You know, I mean, you could just, certain people will take that over the top and worry about it. You've got a dysplasia. And how far can you go if you've got some kind of a cell abnormality, you know, in your mind? How worried can you get? Well, we're going to talk about why certain people catastrophize, and they make small things into big things. And we're going to talk about why other people don't, and then we're going to talk about trivialization. Yes, people who trivialize. People who won't take anything seriously. A classic husband-wife scenario is she says that she is concerned about something, and he says, it's no big deal. Now, this is really, it seems to be a male-female thing. It seems to be many more men are saying it's no big deal, and many more women are saying it is a big deal. Pay attention. Many more women are accusing their husbands of being non-feeling kind of dumbos because they don't have the same feelings that you have. If you say, you know, it's not so important they couldn't come over to dinner. Well, it is important they couldn't come over to dinner. It means that they are going over to the in-laws for dinner and they didn't want to be with us. So the husband says, so what? I got you. And the wife says, no, but our child doesn't want to be with us. Look at what this means. It's not a statement about all women, but this is a classic. Because it is usually the women who have more emotional contact, usually, than the men do. They tend to be more logical. And the battle ensues, and she says to him, you're wrong because you don't have feelings. And he says, you're wrong because you have too many feelings. This typical battle of trivialization and catastrophizing should be the name of a movie. People could catastrophize their own lives. I mean, you don't have to have somebody around, because if you have a health concern, you know, if you get worried about some little thing that goes wrong with you, you got a twitch in your neck and you think that you've got, you know, your head's going to fall off or something, you do that to yourself. We're going to talk about reasons why, because, you know, guilt has a lot to do with it. People who are guilty tend to catastrophize because they're waiting to be punished. People who are doing things in life that they think they're going to be punished for, like the man who gets the letter from the IRS, well, he's probably somebody who spent significant time cheating the government. You see? And now he's waiting to get punished any day now. And a letter comes in the mail and says, we're just checking on your address. Are you in apartment 34 or 35? He believes it's a full-scale investigation. He'll spend weeks on end wondering how he should respond to this. Or a guy who gets a speeding ticket can become completely obsessed in whether or not he should allow himself to get the ticket, you know, to fight it or what, you know. People get very involved in things, and we're going to understand it by the end of today. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I want you to understand these two issues. There's nothing wrong here. We need the bell ringers, the catastrophizers. We need the trivializers, the squelchers. We need them both. What would we do without them? What would we do if you lived in a country where everything was calm, where nothing was important? I'm imagine living in a country where all that people ever said is, don't worry, be happy. Well, yes, there are such countries, aren't there? Well, strangely enough, within those countries, there's a lot of panic that goes on over small things. Health issues, hypochondriasis, is catastrophizing. You understand that? A hypochondriac is somebody who catastrophizes for a living. Some people panic. Some people don't. On the other hand, other than catastrophizing, there is trivializing. Now, this is the opposite. That's taking anyone's concern or worry and treating it as if it's insignificant. Your daughter comes to you screaming, I didn't get that class that I wanted to get. And you say, leave me alone. You know, don't bother me now. Oh, yeah, you're always complaining about it, Grace. You know, whatever you say. You make it nothing. To a child, you know, that panic that they feel, that this terrible feeling they have inside, that means that it's the end of the world. When they suddenly look at a parent who says, I don't pay any attention to you, it has no meaning whatsoever, that doesn't do too good for the brain. But there is something you could do other than to respond to the catastrophe as if it's a catastrophe. At the moment, if you give the child recognition and love, and you look at that child and you say, oh, I understand this is very important to you right now, but I want you to know I love you very much and I'm sorry you have to go through this. It's a way of recognizing it, giving them the attention they need, and still letting them go through it. You hear that call? Treating things as inconsequential. Treating things as picayune. I was just dying to use the word picayune. You know, remember the word picayune? Such a good word. It was in there. We had it. We had to use it someday and here it is. Here I am. Picayunists. Do a show on picayunities. Unimportant. Treating things as unimportant. It could really hurt. So who catastrophizes? Here's the question. Who is a catastrophizer and who are the trivializers? What forms do they use? Catastrophizers. Well, catastrophizers are usually associated with hysteria. You know, there's a sense of hysteria, a sense of a lot of energy. They're anxious people. Anxious people tend to be catastrophizers. Why are they catastrophizers? Well, you know, why are they exaggerating it? Some people believe that the only way they can get a rise out of anybody is to exaggerate the condition. So that's one. You develop that as a child. You know, you realize a way to manipulate your mother and father is to make it a little bigger than it is. So if you feel a small condition, they may not pay attention to you, so you make it a bigger condition. Right? So that's one. People whose parents tended to ignore them might go on to exaggerate things to try to get their parents to pay attention to them. So people who have a hysterical kind of anxious bent. Now, on the other side, people who have a hysterical anxious bent also tend to feel more. They have more antenna. They have more sensors. So they're more emotional in general. They could feel more emotionally than other people do, especially thinkers. People who are thinkers and not feelers don't feel anywhere near the things that people who are feelers and not necessarily thinkers feel. Did I get that right? Yes, I got that right. So the feeler, or the person who is very emotional, can feel things, you know, that the rest of the people don't feel. They could feel, you know, the minor slight of somebody who doesn't want to come over for Thanksgiving dinner. You know, it could be small. Could be just that your daughter's sick and tired of having the same thing all the time. Instead, she wants to go to her boyfriend's house for dinner. She wants something new and different. It's part of her maturation, part of her separation, part of her individualization, part of her growing. And, you know, it could be that mom says, oh, my gosh. Well, let's talk about mom for a minute. Let's talk about people who tend to feel more emotions. They also tend to feel more emotions at different times in their lives. So there are times in a woman's life when she feels more emotions, like especially around, you know, certain times, like empty nest syndrome, kids are leaving the house, menopause could bring a whole bunch of things, menstrual cycle could bring a whole bunch of sensitivities that may be exaggerated. Things could get bigger. Now, for these very reasons, men who are trivializers, who are numb, who don't feel very much, they love people who are emotional. You see, you need the combination. Because the emotional person gives the person who's the intellect and the trivializer gives him some kind of depth. Because a life without emotion is very shallow. Very, very shallow. I mean, the streets in Germany are very clean. But they're boring. You gotta have a little of both. You know, Switzerland's the same kind of thing. I've been through Switzerland. It was, very neat. But there's no flavor. Food in England. You know what I mean? Some of the food in England. It all makes sense. It's fuel for the body, but the flavors are missing. I know people who have never even heard of garlic. I mean, they don't have that spice anywhere in their town. Yeah, I know. I was just looking at the garlic contest in California. They have a garlic feast every year, and then they have a contest, and it's in a certain town in California, and they have garlic ice cream. They do. They have garlic pies. They have garlic. They've turned garlic into a whole, there's a whole town there. They say you could smell it, you know, miles away, and it's wonderful. I mean, these are, I love it. So who else catastrophizes? Phobics catastrophize. And what does that mean? A phobic is a person who has terrible reactions to certain things. So you could be phobic about bugs, you know, called bugophobia. You could be phobic about, about animals. You can be phobic about water. You can be phobic about anything. And phobic means you have an exaggerated fear reaction to certain things. And you keep those things out of your life. You don't keep those things around. And suddenly they appear in your life. You can have a terrible reaction to it. So you may be calm the rest of the time. Well, phobics usually aren't calm the rest of the time. They generally walk around fairly nervous. But something will trigger it, and when something triggers it, you can go really off the edge, like even about illness. You know, you could be phobic about your own illness. Obsessive-compulsive people. People who like to line up the ducks, and they like to keep everything in order. When they have to deal with disorder, like a leak in the ceiling, like a flood, like an invasion of vermin, which happens, you know, I know that's happening out in Long Island now. A lot of people are talking about invasions in their basements. You know, they have crickets. Camel crickets, that's right. Yeah, look it up. No, it's like it could really get, you know, disruptive in your mind. And then all of a sudden, you know, your world that's been kind of orderly is invaded. So comes this concept of invaders. Think about invaders in your life that could tend to trigger you into an exaggerated concern. Exaggerated meaning that you get so hyped up it feels like your whole life is focused around this thing. You know? I mean, I know a lot of people have that with certain things. You could have it with mice. Anything that could be symbolic. So obsessive-compulsive people, people who like to line up the ducks, when the ducks get out of the line, they could get very, very, very upset. Anxious people, deeply emotional people. You know who else tends to get very upset? Mothers. Now, part of mothering, I think, is exaggerated emotion. Part of mothering is you get overly concerned about your child so that you kind of exaggerate the fears at the beginning so that you overwatch, so that you're overcautious. You know, it gets to a point where it's kind of overkill when you start making sure that the playground is padded and the kid's wearing a helmet every second of the day. You know, when they wake up, you put on their helmet and their knee pads while they're in their house. And, I mean, you could get to a point where you get over-concerned. That's happening. Mothers. Mothers get very, very concerned. That seems to be part of it. You know, you wonder why the fathers aren't so concerned. Well, their job is to kind of look at the whole scene, and the mother's job is to look at the small scene. A mother's worry. And, you know, just imagine you, many of you who have called your mother, who have a certain relationship with your mother, you call your mother and all she's doing is worrying. You got a worrying mother. She worries about you. She worries and she worries and she worries and she worries and she, I was concerned, so you stop telling her things. You see, you stop telling her, you know, I had unprotected sex with the guy I met yesterday walking down the street. And you don't tell her, because you may worry. Mothers. Italians. Well, because part of my heritage is Italian, I can tell you that catastrophizing, exaggerating, tends to come with the part of my family that I remember. I would go over for family dinner on a Sunday where we had a lot of relatives there, maybe 30, 40, maybe 50 people there on a classic Sunday. And there would be the catastrophizers. It would be, oh my God, especially my grandmother. She just couldn't get off it. She had, I mean, if one of the uncles showed up later, he couldn't make it or his daughter couldn't make it. She was crying. Crying, upset, and everybody was pacifying her. Everybody was saying, oh, don't worry about it, it's really okay. And one wondered, I as a kid looked at it and said, what are you kidding? What's all this about? Why is she crying and why is he telling her not to cry? Nothing is happening. Well, maybe it's a deal, and maybe by the end of this program you're going to understand it better. So who are the people who tend to catastrophize? Well, you know, manipulators catastrophize. It's very important when a manipulator catches you and catches that you're somebody who has a catastrophizing streak, they will catastrophize with you. So if somebody wants to sell you insurance, they're going to catastrophize the consequences of not having insurance. If they want to sell you a car, they'll catastrophize the dangers of having an unsafe car when they're going to sell you a safe car. People tend to catastrophize to control. Churches, you know, I mean, religions very often will call down the wrath of God as catastrophizing if you disobey your parents. Right? I disobeyed my parents, you know, and you've committed a sin for which you need to be forgiven and do penance. Politicians catastrophize. They catastrophize to get you to vote for them. They catastrophize to get you to stand by and let them do whatever they want to do in the name of protecting your country. We have been catastrophized over the last few years. As they say, up the giggy. It's an expression. Just a lot of it. Now who trivializes? Here's a question. Who trivializes? People who don't get angry tend to trivialize. People who are afraid of anger. People who are reluctant to experience their own anger. The calm people, they trivialize. See, they want to keep everything at bay. They don't want you to get too excited. So they calm you down. They calm you down. There are people who for a living, they make everybody go to peace. You know, they want everybody to be peaceful, nobody to be upset, so they calm everybody down. They trivialize. Now, narcissists tend to trivialize, too. This is an interesting thing. A narcissist trivializes even though they're somebody who exaggerates and catastrophizes. A narcissist will trivialize your grief because your grief is not as important as their grief. So whatever your grief is, it's unimportant. So they'll make fun of it, and they'll make fun of it sometimes with jokes, mockery, sarcasm. Right? They'll just, you know, it's not important. Who cares about him? Ah, you're getting rid of him anyway. But when it comes to their own things, boy, will they catastrophize. Doctors, physicians are professional trivializers. They even have amongst them two phrases. There's one phrase saying, where they say, I'm not impressed. You see, the whole idea of a physician looking at anything, you go to a physician, you're worried because your ear is falling off and your left toe is crossed over your right foot and you have this kind of condition. And the doctor looks at it and he kind of, But they are so, they seem to lack so much empathy, they're not impressed. They're looking at how impressed you are by your own condition, but they're not impressed. They say two phrases. One is, I'm not impressed. The other is, it's not remarkable. It's not remarkable. When they talk to each other, it's not remarkable. Yes, 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 you know, that's happened. Yes, we found a spleen on the doorstep, and it's not remarkable. Happens. Logical people tend to trivialize emotions. With people, they tend to kind of keep people down. They want to trivialize it. Lawyers trivialize it so that you don't get too concerned about the cost. But then as soon as you hire them, very often, frequently, then as soon as you hire them, they say, oh, it'll just take us a couple of weeks. Then the bill goes up and up and up, and they say, well, now it's really important because, you know, and they'll tend to exaggerate it so that you will keep them on retainer, many unscrupulous lawyers. And politicians can trivialize because they don't want you to pay attention to things. Abu Ghraib, who cares? You know, it's a small thing. So remember, we have amplify, magnify, overstate, blow up out of proportion, and romanticizing. All of these is part of the exaggeration. And we exaggerate to ourselves. And then on the other side of it is trivializing. Yes, trivializing will work to help you reduce the impact of something. Sometimes we've got to trivialize ourselves. I've trivialized myself many times in life because there are a lot of things that I would find myself taking very, very seriously. And I wind up laughing at myself and it works. But sometimes you need to pay attention to what you feel. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about two things that I'm sure touches many of you. I definitely will want to hear from you, not immediately, but after our break. I've got some beautiful music for you. It's a short piece by Cal Jader from one of my favorites. The reason it's a favorite is because there's a tenor saxophonist named Jose Tomba Silva, S-I-L-V-A, who you never hear from. I mean, he didn't do any recordings by his own, but Jose Silva is playing tenor saxophone on this piece, which I will be playing for you right after our station break. And then we'll be back and take your phone calls at 212-209-2900. So we're going to take a short break, a little music, and we'll be back.
W-B-A-I, WBI, Zapaman, WBI, and WBI, WBI, Zapaman.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Thank you. your mother. Do you remember me?
Hi. Mom, hi. I was just going to call you. Is that a funny
Arthur,
thing? You know that I had my hand
Arthur,
on the phone to call.
You were supposed to call me last Friday.
Mother, darling, I just didn't have a second, and I could cut my throat.
Second.
I was so busy.
Arthur, I know. Friday.
It was just work, and
all
darling,
day Friday night.
I kept thinking I got to call Mom.
All day
dear,
Saturday.
Oh, listen, believe
all
me.
Day Sunday.
Oh,
Father
I felt.
Said to me, Phyllis, eat something. Your face.
Darling,
I said, no, Harry, no. I don't want my mouth to be full when my son calls.
Mom.
I never called.
Mother, I was sending up Vanguard. I didn't have a second.
Well, it's always something, isn't it?
Okay, honey,
you
look.
You know, Arthur, I'm sure that all the other scientists there have mothers, you know? And I'm sure that they all find time after their breakfast or before their count-off...
Down.
...to pick up the phone and call their mother.
Honey, listen, now you have
you
me on the phone.
You know how I worry.
Well, I do, that's the point.
I
that's
read in the paper how you keep losing them.
Mother! I don't lose them!
Well, I nearly went out of my mind.
Okay, honey,
I
now...
thought, what if they're taking it out of his pay?
All right. All right, that's it. Okay, fine. All right, Mother, look, darling, please, honey, Mom, dear, please, don't just tell me how you are, Mom. Tell me how you are. How are you?
I'm sick.
I'm sorry to hear it. I really am. What's wrong?
Nothing. You know what it is, honey.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
same thing it's always been.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
It's
yeah.
my nerves.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I went to the doctor.
Yeah.
And he told me
yeah.
right out.
Yeah.
He said,
yeah.
Listen, Mrs. White.
Yeah, yeah.
Who
yeah.
are you fooling?
Yeah, sure, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You are
yeah.
a very nervous,
yeah, yeah,
very
yeah.
high strung woman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, God knows that's true. Yeah.
And
yeah.
you cannot stand yeah. the slightest aggravation.
Well, yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a doctor. Yeah. I know that.
Yeah.
Know
yeah, 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 of course. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Doctor, I have this son. It's the truth. The boy is not lying. He is. He's very busy. You see, Doctor, he's too busy to pick up a phone and call his mother.
Honey, listen, Mom,
well,
dear, I want you to tell Mom.
Said that to him. That man turned pale.
Right, dear, Mom.
He said, Mrs. White, Mom. I have been a doctor for 35 years,
right.
and I've never heard of a son too busy to call his mother.
Right, Mom, dear,
that's
listen,
I... That's what he said to me, Arthur.
I know, honey,
and
I want to...
that man is a doctor.
Mom, Mother, please, dear... will you just tell me, what did the doctor say they're going to do with you?
Well... I may be in the hospital for a while, so...
The hospital?
Yes, the hospital.
Well, but what are they going to do?
Well, they'll x-ray my nerves.
Mother, why didn't you let me know? All you had to do was drop... Well, how can I not aggravate myself over...
Let me forget it. How's your hangnail?
All right. Mother,
yes.
Please, just don't worry.
Arthur... What does that mean? Honey, what does that mean, don't worry?
Nothing, actually. I don't know. I just said the first thing that came into my head. It was a mistake.
Arthur, listen to me. I'm a mother.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, you know. I should have realized,
what's
and I didn't.
No,
it was a mistake.
Know?
I'm sorry. No,
no, you're
I'm,
very young.
Well, I...
Someday...
That was Mike Nichols and Elaine May from their album In Retrospect, The Mother and Son. So, my friends, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, listening in with Jose Tomba Silva playing tenor saxophone in the background. You don't get a chance to see and hear Tomba very much. And we're talking about exaggerating things, you know? Exaggerating, going beyond your normal range. Times that things feel so important, it's like you feel like you could die if you don't take care of it. Or times that the person you're with and the person you care about just blows things out of proportion so far. You don't know how to deal with it over and over again. You don't know what you're coming home to. What's the next worry? What's the next concern? What's the next thing we have to deal with? And not understanding the balance, how important it is that each be allowed to have their own turf. Because, you know, if you're a fixer, if you're somebody who believes that you have to correct everything and fix everything, you just don't want to hear it from the other person. So take a deep breath and give me your calls at 212-209-2900. The programming artistry of the Positive Mind team. It's kind of a lot of fun. Hey, with you, my friends, 212-209-2900. We are taking your calls. We're talking about exaggeration, amplification. We're talking about magnifying things, worrying a lot, and your reaction to it. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Thanks for waiting.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hello, Armand. How are you?
I'm good. Who is this?
My name is Pete. I'm from Dutchess County, New York.
Hello, Peter.
I just wanted to say I enjoy your show. I think you got a very soothing voice. I enjoy it very much. What I wanted to say was, as far as blowing things out of proportion, I think there's two sides to, like you mentioned, Abu Ghraib. And I see it the other way, where I think a lot of that stuff is blown out of proportion. So you can kind of, that's kind of a double-edged sword. You can use that kind of logic to put a point across, and you can kind of manipulate a point that way. You know what I mean?
No, tell me exactly what you mean by thinking that it goes both ways. Because already, you know, you're probably triggering people in both camps. But you're saying that you think it could get exaggerated, the concern.
Yes.
And
yes.
So then you could think that the whole idea of torture becomes a new political football, that it really doesn't have to do with concern about people, just another political football.
Well, I think you could take, for instance, if Bill Clinton was the president and there was allegations of torture, I think a lot of people on the left wouldn't be even having that discussion. I think it's being discussed mostly because George Bush is the president, and it is being used as a political football. Anything to hurt the president becomes an issue, so things become, a lot of things, in my point of view, become exaggerated.
So you see how the politicians will do it, but let me ask you about it in your life.
Yeah.
In your life, do you ever have anybody who's exaggerating things?
No, absolutely. I'm a builder. I'm a building contractor, and of course.
You're loaded with it. You're loaded with it as a building contractor.
Right.
You're dealing with people's panic all the time. And you know the interesting thing about building contractors?
What's that?
The people believe that by exaggerating, you respond better.
Uh-huh.
You see, you can't get your contract, if your contract is doing three or four jobs, and you have hired them for one, and then they're a little behind in their schedule of dealing with you, what you do is you exaggerate the consequences of their not being there, hoping that they're going to pay you better attention. And you know, the truth of it is, I think you do pay better attention when people are exaggerating on the other side. What do you think?
Well, I think that's true. I think a little bit of exaggeration on both sides is not a bad thing. But
well, how would you exaggerate on your side?
Well,
how
I
busy
might go,
you are, you know, the truck broke down.
Well, that's kind of a negative exaggeration, but a positive exaggeration might be you might try to build somebody up to increase the cost of the job. Okay,
right. You don't want to get that siding. You want to get a different kind of siding because that will make your house more valuable and more worth, and it'll be prettier to everybody in the neighborhood.
Correct.
That kind of thing. So you work both sides.
Well, I'm not saying that I do that all the time, but yeah, I'm sure I do that. Yes, I think we all have
a Pete...
Ways which we exaggerated both ways.
Peter, are you from an Italian family?
No, I'm not.
Because I have an uncle who's actually... He's my uncle. He's in construction. I was wondering if I was talking to him. You sound just like him. Hey, listen, Pete. So it's okay, and thank you for saying it. You know, it's okay. You could be on either side. Now, what about your family life? Who's at home?
Well, I've got, you know, I'm married, and I've got five kids, you know.
Now, if you're a contractor and you're a construction guy, right, they understand that you're a pretty logical guy. So how will your five kids and your wife deal with you when they want to get your attention?
Well, I think sometimes they'll raise their voice or they'll exaggerate things, I guess, too, to try to get me to do what they want, you know.
Because you've got to turn your head because you don't see things as tragic, right?
Not normally, no.
Yeah, okay, so there it is right there. So the way to get a rise out of you is to kind of boil it up a little bit, bring the temperature up, you know? That's what you need.
My wife's Italian, so yeah, she's pretty good at that.
Yes. Okay, so that's why a lot of people marry Italians. Hey, listen, Pete, thanks for calling in.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Sure. 212-209-2900. I love everybody's honesty. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I've been thinking about the conversation. First, I was thinking about other people who are, seem to be, either manipulative in some way by trivializing or exaggerating things.
Uh-huh.
But, when it sort of came back around to me, I was thinking about my reaction sometimes when I feel that, let's say my husband might trivialize something, like maybe I want him to say something to somebody a certain way, and he doesn't, and then he says whatever way he comes out, and I feel that.
Could you give me a better example? What's your name, by the way?
Kathy.
Kathy, give me a better example of that. You want your husband to say something to a certain person in a certain kind of way.
All right. All right. For instance, we're involved in a building right now. And building something. And I wanted him to be sure to tell the man who's ordering the windows to not put the order in because we're making some changes.
Okay.
And he said to me, no, he won't, don't worry about it because he told me so in an email already. But the man's been questionable about some other things, so I felt, you know, just verify it with him and tell him that. So he said, fine. But when he spoke to him, he called him, and he didn't say that at all. He just started saying things about we wanted to make some changes and, you know, to get back to him, you know.
And so, therefore, it didn't turn out the way you wanted it to because he wasn't exactly specifically clear on what the instructions were. And that frequently happens. So why'd you send him out on the job? Why didn't you do it? Why didn't you make the call?
Well, you know, I guess because he said he would talk to him, and I, you know, I said,
okay,
fine.
Okay, so Kathy, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
So there are some times that there are people who understand the importance of things, want to deal with something and get it one way, and then they send somebody out who doesn't do it as well, and then they blame the person who brings it out. Now, in your mind, you know your husband.
Yeah.
You know he's not going to do it exactly the way you want it. You know he's not going to get it, build it up to the intensity that you want it built up to. He's not going to be as firm as you are because he's not that way.
Right.
Your husband's a lot more casual than you are.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
And you love him for the reason that he doesn't take everything to a panic, that he's your sobering guy.
Yeah, right.
You love him for that, and then you want him to be the not-so-sober guy, and I want you to go rip his throat out while you're at it so you make sure he performs. You know what you need, Kathy?
No.
You need Pete. You need Pete, our last caller, to intercede for you. He sounds like a good guy. So sometimes it's a very important point you bring up, that there is a part of us that wants to get, whenever we feel the importance of something, we want people on our team, we want people to take it as seriously as we do.
Yes, right.
And if they don't, we feel kind of angry at them.
Well, I think I feel vulnerable in a way.
Yes,
I mean,
that's
if this
right.
is only in the relationship with, say, my husband or maybe somebody else very close to me, it could happen. If I'm on my own, I'm fine because I won't make those mistakes. In my mind, mistake, you know. I'll deliver things the way I want it said, basically. But when somebody else is representing or doing something, you know, for this, for both of us, or...
Yeah, it's tough.
It's different. Yeah.
It's tough to let it go. It's tough. That's one of the tough things about being an employer, you know, realizing that your employees may do it different than you do. Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
If there was a really push came to shove, and mm-hmm. you have kids?
I have two. They're young adults.
Young adults, both yours and your husband's kids, not yours
no.
from a previous marriage?
They're mine from previous marriage.
That's what I thought. Would you? And you'd fight to the death for your kids, right? and would your husband?
Would he?
Yeah.
You mean in the world?
Yeah, to defend your kids.
You know, I think yes, and I don't know.
And
he
you
probably
see,
is a little more hesitant because it depends on the circumstance. He doesn't know what his role is.
Yeah, and that's part of the confusion. So I want you to understand, especially as a mother, it's very intense for you and it's very clearly defined. And for him, these things are not so clearly defined. So he won't be taking it in the way that you are, but you do value the contribution he makes in your life.
Oh, yeah.
Which is to keep you calmer and a little more reserved. So buy him a flower tonight.
Okay.
Go out and get some flowers for him as a gift to him.
Okay.
You know, it's an important thing. Thanks for calling, Catherine.
All right, thanks so much.
Right. Two and two, if you didn't hear the program we did on flowers, was that on Thursday? Wednesday, last Wednesday. Boy, you could probably find it on the Internet. It might have looked that up for me, would you? And it's really remarkable. Oh, no, it was on Wednesday with Roberta Atti. Dude, we got another program lined up for tomorrow, equally exciting. Be sure to tune in at 1 o'clock. But the program on flowers and the meaning of flowers and how they affect people and what they're about is really something special. So you can get it, and you can get archives through WBAI or through my website, thepositivemind.com. Of course, if you're really struggling, somehow you can't download that stuff. You could always call my office, and we could try to get it to you. So, Kathy, thank you. Pete, thank you. Let's take one more caller. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just listening. I'm laughing because my husband and I just got off the cell phone with each other, and we were both trying to get through to you, so I know he's listening to me.
So you're both trying to get through to me?
Yes.
Oh, boy,
he's
I wish
at work,
he could.
And I'm at home.
Oh, boy. Michael, you could pick up any other phone. What's his name? What's his first name?
Ed.
If you happen to get this is Michael G. Haskins happens to be such a master engineer. If you happen to get Ed on the phone, you can kind of go through them. If we could patch them all in together. There are a lot of callers calling in, but maybe Ed's going to be there. So what about you and Ed?
Okay. I was laughing because, I was laughing because I was listening while I was rocking my daughter to sleep for a nap, and I heard you talk about someone who catastrophizes.
Yes.
And exaggerates, and that's me. And then I heard you talking about the fixer,
right.
And that's him. And
so,
we get into this cycle of conflict where I just keep exaggerating, and then somehow, some way, what I'm saying doesn't get across anyway because I just keep, it keeps escalating. And then he says he doesn't listen to anything I say because
He goes completely numb.
Absolutely.
Is what happens. They call it stonewalling, you know, and there's a wonderful group of CDs, a wonderful group of programs we have on the Internet which are available. One is on stonewalling specifically, which I think you should listen to. It is a fabulous thing because it's a mechanism of the brain that helps you take noise away from being invasive. So, you know, eventually people who are saying things you don't like, you keep saying them and you're exaggerating them, and the brain allows you to stonewall, to actually shut out the voice of the other person.
Mm.
And you don't want him to do that, right?
No, and I know when he's doing it.
And you know when he's doing it. So
and I will manipulate until I break it down.
And how, how do you break it down?
I somehow wait for a vulnerable moment on his part.
Yeah.
Or I'll say or do something that I know is going to deflate him in a way.
Uh-huh.
Or bring out his emotions, whether they're positive or negative. Once I know I've done it, I know I've done it.
So if you could get him to rage, you know you've got it.
Got it.
Right? If you get him, you nailed you. Now that you're rageful, I can get my information to
and
you.
And it doesn't even frighten me. It's, got him, okay. Now I go to the next place to manipulate.
Everybody wants to get a raise out of their mate. You know that? It's always great to be able to get a raise out of your mate. Did you ever try to get him as well with a teaspoon of honey?
Yes. We've come quite far. We did go to therapy together, and so I can laugh at it because I know he's listening to me because he knows what I do and I know what he does. So we've learned to appreciate the differences also because he, you know, makes my world a little more humorous and I make him a little more serious. And so it's a good balance. You know, we could take the negative when we have conflict and, you know, make it crazy, or we can laugh at it at times and appreciate it because I could not live with someone like me.
Yeah, I understand. So that's where the difference, difference comes in. That's where you get the balance.
Yes, he's a little colder, and I was laughing because we were talking about Germany because he is part German, being very neat. But interestingly, there were a couple of things that I saw were not in each of us. But one of the things is that he's actually quite messy, and I'm very neurotic and neat, and I'm very anxious if something's in the wrong place, so I'm aware that I do that. But he's not very neat.
Who makes breakfast? You do or he does?
I'm sorry?
Who does the cooking, you or him?
Both of us. He probably more than me, because I don't have the patience.
I would imagine the two of you must whip up a hell of a breakfast.
That's interesting.
Together, I'm sure, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
What's your name?
Terry.
Terry, thank you for calling in. I've got to be going.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. They wonder. This is Armand Miller with you with The Positive Mind. Do take a look at our website, thepositivemind.com, www.thepositivemind.com. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with Roberta Ati.